From the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Notstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up, and let's wade into the deep end of what's really happening in your old North State.
Welcome, this is Ray Notstein and my friend and colleague Brooke Medina for our new inaugural edition of Civitalk. You can download the show on iTunes or find it on the website Freedom Action Network. Hey Brooke, how's it going today?
I'm good, Ray. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Let's discuss this controversy surrounding the GOP convention in Charlotte. Before we do that, I've always been fascinated by conventions in my life, and especially just growing up and watching them on TV. Even though I don't really like partisan politics as much as I used to, I've always been fascinated by some of these iconic moments in the convention in history. Of course, there's a Robert Kennedy in 1964 who tried to give a speech after the assassination of his brother, the president. And of course, people are just cheering and giving him a thunderous applause. And I think it's like 10 minutes before he can even start speaking. And in 1964, Barry Goldwater gave that famous line that inspired a lot of conservatives, even though he got trounced in the election, that goes, extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice, and moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue. And of course, that 1976 convention where Ronald Reagan came down from the upper deck and gave that great iconic speech, where I think a lot of people on the convention floor felt like they had nominated the wrong person in a very close primary. In 1980, Ted Kennedy gave a great speech where he talked about the dream never dying. It was a famous theme of his throughout of his career at the Democratic Convention. He almost upset Jimmy Carter that year. Brooke, why don't you tell us a little bit about the timeline of what's going on in Charlotte with this controversy? I mean, it's a big deal in North Carolina, and it's kind of bubbled to the surface in the last week.
Yeah, it has. And it's funny that it has just now bubbled to the surface, right? Because this is the bids and the discussions around this convention coming to Charlotte actually began at the beginning of this year in January. And so it's, if you're watching the news, you're only seeing it obviously just highlighted at this point in time, in part because now the RNC has made the decision to host it at Charlotte. But the Charlotte City Council was in discussions about this since January, and there didn't seem to be any opposition except for one particular council member who, if you follow her on Facebook, she has been known to say incredibly inflammatory things and just regularly pushes the envelope. But by all measures, it looked like the rest of the city council, which is primarily Democrat, was on board with bidding on this convention and allowing the RNC to come. And so it wasn't until the beginning of July that we began, probably the end of June, actually, there was a city council meeting where, again, Councilwoman Mayfield was expressing again her opposition to this. But then you heard some other people maybe voice some concerns, but it wasn't until the beginning of July that people on the council took hardline stances against this convention. But it wasn't just that they took a stance against the convention. It was that up until that point in time, they were silent about it. But then when they did take a public stance, they really, you know, ratcheted up the hyperbolic rhetoric against this.
Yeah, so it was interesting and sort of looking into this controversy. There was a Republican council member. I don't remember his name, but if you just go online and read any of the stories about the convention, you'll probably find his quote. He was very intrigued by saying, hey, if there had been this opposition from the get-go, that he would have said, you know, maybe put a halt to it or balked at hosting the convention. But to me, that kind of says something about the controversy and it just kind of getting ginned up there real recently. And to me, I think the biggest problem, Brooke, with some of this is some of the quotes, you know, that are conflating this with white supremacy, with some of these quotes that are, you know, I have a minority child in my household, I can't support this, or things like that. To me, it's just sort of the hyperbolic nature of some of the quotes. I think you can come out and say, well, we're a progressive city, and you know, maybe we don't want this, but I think some of the hyperbolic quotes are very damaging in a state that's really very diverse to begin with and has a myriad of different viewpoints and political viewpoints at that.
Yeah, that's right. It's almost as if, especially if you look on Twitter and read some of these comments that are in various articles, Charlotte Observer has obviously been covering this a lot. The way that they paint those that are attending the RNC and lump them all as if this is A, going to be like Charlottesville, and B, as if every Republican under a Trump presidency is a racist or a white supremacist or an enabler of that. It's troublesome, to be sure, because that, you and I were speaking about this earlier in the office, is that when you begin to conflate racism with things that a public policy might enact that are pretty neutral, and I'm not talking about Jim Crow laws, that was clear, right, that was blatant racism, but I'm talking about just saying, okay, the Republican National Convention, racist. When you do that, that's actually devaluing the importance of that word racist and the weight that that should carry, because it should carry some heavy weight to it, so that when real racism does occur, we are so morally and virtuously attuned to hate it,
right,
that we're able to fight it adequately. And that's not happening right now, especially in this conversation with regards to Charlotte hosting RNC.
That's a great point. Let me read a quote I found in the New York Times from a story today. It's from Justin Harlow, a Democratic member of the city council. And I think he was one of the late opponents on this issue.
I think they were all late except for Mayfield.
Yep.
So,
I'd no sooner bring Donald Trump and the RNC to Charlotte, to the home that I chose and love, where my wife and I are raising our black son, any sooner that I would support a Klan rally in this city.
What do you say to that? I mean,
right.
So there are a number of problems there. Obviously, the first is that he's conflating, again, like we talked about, Republicans with racists. Now, I would be the first to admit that there are people that have the political party designation of Republican that are indeed racist. One, sure, of them just bowed out of the, or actually, are they still running for office here in the General Assembly? There's someone that was blatantly racist.
I think so. He's been disavowed, obviously, he's by
been,
the party.
Yeah, he's
but
been
I think
disavowed
he's
for... Still by the party.
Has a semblance of a campaign going,
right,
on.
And I've seen it on the Democratic side,
sure,
as well.
Yeah.
One of them, actually, one of their candidates just backed out for a blog from 2006. I would say racism knows no party lines, but for him to just lump an entire group or an entire party as racist and liken them to the Klan of all,
right,
it's troublesome, and it gets us nowhere, and we wonder why our political discourse is in shambles.
Right.
This is why. Another quote that I thought was saddening is that, okay, this is Harlow, which, who did you just quote?
Harlow.
You quoted Harlow too, so I'm going to pick someone else then, because we've already gotten enough of his.
You can pick on Harlow if you want.
No, okay, this one I thought was interesting. The chair of the Charlotte Clergy Coalition for Justice, Reverend Amanda Barbie, said that the proposed economic gain of the convention isn't worth the safety and integrity of minorities who feel threatened by the Trump administration. Well, part of that threat that they feel, I would say, is ginned up by the media.
Yeah, there's a lot of division.
And these narratives that are going on and being perpetuated,
right,
that oftentimes aren't substantiated. Listen, I'm not going to defend the president's statements. I think he puts his foot in his mouth a lot.
You think?
Something tells me. However, I... Again, this goes back to devaluing words and not using words in their proper context. And I think this is one of those things where, when she's likening the Trump administration as being unsafe for minorities, I that's a stretch. And she goes on to say, though, my life is worth more than $50 million, Barbie said. We cannot risk people's lives for a dollar. And for her to say that people's lives are actually in jeopardy because of the RNC, that I don't understand. What do you think about that? Do you think there is any credence to that?
I think there's no credence to that. I really don't. And I think if you're against Donald Trump, that's fine, obviously. You know, you and I were looking at that electoral map that was just published by the New York Times today, or at least highlighted by the New York Times today, that showed parts of the heartland where you have to drive 2.5 hours to get to a precinct that voted for Hillary Clinton, you know, in Trump country. And it does show the division. And part of this, I think, is, you know, a convention's going to be in a big city. Most big cities are run by Democrat politicians, very liberal leftist Democrat politicians at that. And there's really no credence to this. I think there's, like you said, there's a problem with equating and conflating these types of racism, where it really devalues racism. And it devalues sort of real problems that we have in terms of acceptance and tolerance in this nation. So to me, it's so absurd. But whether you agree with Trump, whether you hate Trump, you like Trump, I think part of the problem with this is I think there's a certain segment of the left, and this is true of the right too during parts of Obama's tenure in office, but I think that refuse to reflect. They live in these bubbles. You know, you live in an urban pocket, so to speak. You don't really know anybody that supports Trump. So that's why you see a lot of these outrageous sort of meltdowns on social media about Trump.
Right. Well, 2-1 is the way that Charlotte voters voted for Clinton, so it was almost by a 2-1 margin.
Right.
But then if you look right outside of Charlotte, it's like a donut.
Sure.
And that's all red. And so some of them, I think it was Union County, voted for Trump 2-1 by a 2-1 margin. So it goes to show you really how pluralistic North Carolina is in a lot of ways, and there are pockets of these in the more urban areas. You do see more Democratic voters and Republicans in the rural areas. And Charlotte, though, being one of the most feasible options here in the state of North Carolina, it would have either been Charlotte or Raleigh. And let's be honest, it was going to be Charlotte over Raleigh.
Right.
They're going to have to learn how to work with those Republicans that surround their entire city.
Yeah.
And I would say if the roles were reversed and Republicans primarily lived in the urban areas, they would need to buckle up and do the same thing and be big boy about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they have to put some big boy pants on. I think the left primarily in this country, certainly during this hour, more so than the right, needs to have some introspection about what's going on in this country, because I feel like Trump in many ways is more of a symptom of a larger problem. So whether you like Trump, you dislike him, in many ways he's just sort of this extension or symptom of the division in our country, right? People wanted to put the middle finger up to Washington, D.C. They wanted to tell Washington, D.C. off. And in a way, I think they're right, because Washington, D.C. hasn't been run very well. There's a lot of things broken about the federal government. We're 23 trillion dollars in debt, or headed that way. And so there's a lot of brokenness in D.C. And I think there has to be some introspection on the left and say, hey, what's going on in this country that we're helping to foment this division? I certainly think people on the right, too, can have that same type of and need that same type of introspection. But, you know, I think that people need to just kind of calm down a little bit. There's always a chance, if you live in a big city, that a party convention can come to your city. And, you know, I think there just needs to be some level-headedness to this whole thing. Because, and like the mayor said, it doesn't mean we endorse the ideas of the Republican Party or Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It just means that we're a tolerant city. And, you know, they showed us how tolerant they were with transgender bathrooms and all these things. So Charlotte's really ground zero for this so-called tolerance that the left proclaims in so many ways.
But oh, the transgender school curriculum,
yeah,
too. They're
right.
The ones that have pushed it on their students. So, yeah, where's the tolerance?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a big part of the mantra of the leadership in that city. And so I think they just need to show it a little bit better. And, you know, anytime I think you live in a big city, you have to be willing to understand that a convention or just big events are going to come to your city. I mean, because you have the infrastructure to support it. You have a major airport there in Charlotte, so it's easy for people to get direct flights into Charlotte from a lot of different places. So I just feel like there has to be a little bit more self-recognition.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, there hasn't been a lot of self-recognition. Now, there has been hats off to the mayor, Vi Lyles, for really extending that olive branch. She apparently will not be doing the the initial speech at the convention, which is breaking with tradition or just giving a welcoming address. However, I tip my hat to her for the way that she has advocated for this and cross party lines, as well as numerous other Democrats that are on that council. They have not been highlighted as much as those like Dimple and Harlow. But I would say that they have proven a much greater commitment to tolerance and just civil discourse and a willingness to listen to other ideas than some of their younger council members. But I did want to read you a couple of tweets that I've read in response to.
Great. Bad tweets.
Yeah. So the mayor, when she announced that Charlotte had won the bid, there were numerous people attacking her, saying, you know, I'm not going to vote for you again. I voted for you before. Never again. I've learned my lesson. But one individual said, I can't believe that Charlotte, my favorite place in America, is saying welcome to Trump and his racist, sexist, xenophobic agenda. I can't believe that Charlotte is saying welcome to banning Muslims and separating children from their mothers and putting them in cages. I can't believe Charlotte is saying welcome to destroying our environment and denying evidence-based reasoning. I can't believe Charlotte is inviting bigotry in the name of inclusion. I can't believe Charlotte cares about its appearance and international spotlight more than its moral values. And see, so I think this gives us a unique window into the way that those on the ultra progressive left think. And they see this almost, resisting this as almost an act of patriotism.
Right.
So, I mean, are there other times in history that you can think of that people responded in these sort of ways where they just saw themselves as defending the side of justice or righteousness, but were completely off base? Well, I could think of a few. I mean, we think of Nazi Germany, the Nazis. They were completely felt like they were justified in segregating the Jewish population and going and obviously bringing them into concentration camps and brutally murdering them. You know, when we become an ideologue and we become so so disillusioned by, what reality. And so we end up going so far to the deep end because we can't handle what we're actually dealing with. We tell ourselves a lot of lies, and that's what they've been doing, is telling themselves lies that this is the resistance and that they are justified in resisting.
Yeah, I think there's a broader problem, which I know you know well, of course, too, is that we've just started politicizing every little event, happenstance, occurrence in this country. And really what happens when you start doing that is when you take things that are just sort of in the civic sphere, or they're just in sort of the general sphere of life, and turn it into some sort of political agenda or modus operandi, so to speak, to sort of claim that you're right all the time or that you're justified in everything you do because of some sort of event that really has no impact on you, because you can certainly turn the TV off. If you live in Charlotte or the surrounding area, you're probably not going to the convention anyways. So, you know, if you get triggered by news reports or the media, you can certainly turn that out. So I just think that there's an element that I think people need to just relax and turn off the TV or turn off the social media or the screen and just sort of go into relaxation mode if you feel like you're going to be triggered during that summer period of 2020 for some reason. So I would just say I'm just really discouraged in this nation by everything under the sun being politicized. And I think that just shows you that we really don't see any sort of, part of that speaks, I think, to sort of secularism, but also it sort of speaks to this idea that we're in government, so that we're in government and sort of, you know, we have to put everything in its context and say, hey, you know, this happens here, this happens at this time, so to speak. And so what I really think is that there just needs to be a lot of chilling out on this issue.
Yes, well, you know, calming people that are bent on not remaining calm is easier said than done. You and I both have little kids, and we know how that can be.
Yeah. It sort of is, you know, the sort of culture now is like dealing with little kids, because there's not really any reasoning or logic that you can do for a very young child, you know. And when I try to give my young son medicine, he goes ballistic. And so, mm-hmm. You know, when you try to feel like you're adding to the discourse from sort of a nonpartisan or just trying to speak truth into an issue going on, you just sort of drowned out by the madness today.
Well, when feelings are the new facts, that's really difficult to do. And so, like you said, it has a lot more to do with culture and how we civically engage and understand that whether it be what we're consuming in music or television, if we're constantly living in some sort of echo chamber where we're not interacting with other ideas that maybe are not what we would say are conventional or mainstream, it's really hard to listen to those ideas and just allow people to voice them without expressing outrage. If we haven't developed that moral muscle of tolerance. And tolerance doesn't mean that we agree with things that other people say or do. It really isn't. And it doesn't even mean that you're unbiased. We right. all have bias sure. built into us. That's just life. And it's okay. In some respects, bias is okay. And there are different types of biases that aren't okay. But I would say an ideological bias is fine if you're measuring it against a standard called truth. And that's the thing. Oftentimes on the left, they have refused or rejected this idea of truth
right.
or absolute truth. It's just your truth, my truth, right. you know, his truth, the
my
unicorn's
experience.
Truth.
Yeah, Trump's
yeah. own. And that has obviously led to so many identity crises and our right. young people with the transgender issues because they don't know what their truth is right now. They keep being told to find a truth and there is nothing else actually pinning them to reality other than their feelings. And how scary is that as a young person? Which kind of reminds me again of what you just you mentioned earlier in the show with regard to the Charlotte bathroom bill and mm-hmm. and how that led to just a promotion of transgender teaching in their schools and just liberalism and not classical liberalism, but this progressive postmodern kind just eventually crumbles and falls underneath its own weight because it can't be held for very long because it's not based on any truth. So
what do you think, what do you think are some sort of solutions to problems like that? Just sort of in the immediate, we're probably not going to see any sort of drastic change within our culture, but I'd love to just talk for a few minutes about solutions to some of the meltdowns that we're seeing in society over every little small political thing. And, you know, things that 20, 30 years ago would just roll off people's backs, even if they were interested in it, you know? I mean, it's very common for a convention to take place in some sort of American city, and I think it's a great thing for North Carolina. It showcases the state. It brings people to Charlotte that have never been there in their entire life. It's the first time they're hosting a Republican convention. They hosted the Democratic National Convention during Obama's reelection in 2012. And so it's an opportunity again for Charlotte, the Queen City, to just show itself off. So the amazing things that are present there, you know, some of the sports heritage, the dining and things like that. But what do you think might help convince people to sort of ratchet back their rhetoric a little bit? Have we reached peak rhetoric in this country yet, or have we
I
not?
I hope so.
Yeah, I know.
I hope so. It's sad. Like I said, we both have kids. Do we want our kids growing up in a country that's even worse when it comes to civil discourse than we're at now? To me, it feels like we can't get any lower. And I hope that's the case. I hope the only direction to go is up. But something that I've seen even bear out in my own life with my interactions with others that don't agree with me is just to ask questions, to be a good question asker who just seeks to understand. Winning is not always the most important aspect of a debate. And right. I know that kind of goes against everything we ever think about. We want to win. We want to be right. It's a pride issue. But sometimes a win actually is equivalent, or what constitutes a win is getting to know that person a little bit more and understand the world from their perspective. So even if I completely disagree with the person. I remember one time, for example, I was at an abortion clinic and we were protesting and praying out in front of it. So I had engaged in a bit of pro-life activism when I was mm-hmm. younger, and there was a young feminist out there. We were both about the same age, probably 18 years old, and she was just screaming in my face and was convinced that I hated her and was out to get her. And I just began to talk to her in a normal voice and just ask her a little bit about her own life. And we connected on a human level. That way she wasn't demonizing me anymore. Right. It was like, okay, we can completely disagree on this issue. However, you know, we're both human beings, and we have value that transcends even what we believe or our political ideologies. The life issue is an issue it's a hill I'm willing to die on.
Right.
But at the end of the day, she was a person, and I was not going to reach her by hurling and lobbing insults at her. And so the best advice I can give is to be a good question asker and try to understand where people are coming from.
I think that's the most important thing that we can do. Nikki Haley, the ambassador to the UN, former governor of South Carolina, gave a speech. It's kind of interesting when you contrast some of like Trump's Twitter remarks or things he says from time to time. But she gave a speech in D.C., I think it was just a few days ago. It got a lot of media coverage, surprisingly. But she was saying that, you know, this is not winning an argument. And just like you said, winning a debate is not how we convince people. It's not how we change the culture or transform or, you know, or have our ideas win out. Right. Because when we're back and forth in these elections, you know, this is what happens usually in society is Republicans win for a while. Democrats win for a while. This sort of swings back and forth. There's a pendulum in this country where we swing back to the right a little bit. We swing back to the left a little bit. But if we're just going to retaliate against people when we've won or when we've lost, then, you know, a constitutional republic can't function that way, right?
Right. Well, and to me, though, that pendulum that you described has become even more and more extreme.
Yeah, no,
there are plenty of people. Well, we're about to do a poll lunch next month, right, on unaffiliated voters,
right?
Because people are getting so fed up with the hyper partisanship on both sides.
Right.
And is it any wonder when they see these things? And obviously, part of it is exacerbated by the media. This is what they choose to focus on.
I think that's exactly right.
So it gives us a skewed perspective of what's really going on. And when you mentioned last week on the program talking to someone at the Sheets gas station, mm-hmm. and you probably didn't agree with that person on politics or other things like that, but you all were able to just engage in a civil discussion about things.
Right.
Even that is a beautiful thing that I think we need to make sure that we don't lose sight of. That is likely more common than the vitriol that we see expressed on.
Brooke, I think you're exactly right. I think one of the things that's discouraging to me is that's why I probably haven't watched cable news in a decade. The few times that I do watch cable, I don't have cable anyways right now, like a lot of people, but the few times that I do watch cable is actually during the convention because I find some of it interesting. But the media foments so much division, and that's kind of what I was trying to get with the Sheets analogy, is that there's not really this division in society that the media is making it out to be. It's always crisis. There's always a crisis. Whatever's happening in the news turns into this political crisis, whether it's something that could just be humanitarian. In some way, it's turning into this sort of catch-all political crisis, and the media just drums up so much division. You saw it in Charlottesville, Virginia. You know, the media's on the ground getting quotes from people and basically fomenting the type of division that I don't think really exists in most pockets in this country. It certainly doesn't exist in much of middle America. And so to me, that's very discouraging. And I think the media is very, very important for a free society. I think we have to understand that more. It's important. You know, we want to trash the media, but it's rightly called the Fourth Estate for an important reason, that it's a watchdog on the republic. It reports on what people are doing. And if you don't have an active, and I would argue supposedly supposed to be, nonpartisan media, which we don't have by and large in most communities or in most areas of the country. But if you don't have that, then you don't have that important watchdog on the country. But it's unfortunate that they foment so much division. So to me, that's just very discouraging right now.
It is. So hopefully with our show, CivitTalk, we can at least contribute to some of that civil dialogue here in North Carolina. We know a lot of our listeners, we know you all care about this as well, and this is important to us. So let's do our part to be those people that engage in kind ways with the people at Sheets that we come across at the gas station and the Walmart line, wherever. But let's do our part to make this state more civil and lay the groundwork for a good good discussion as we head into this next election season.
Right. So. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate our audience. Find us on Civitalk on iTunes, and we look forward to next time. Signing out.